The Daily Lectionary gives us a beast of a text from Zechariah chapter 12 today. Doing a little reading again on it, trying to figure out what on earth is going on. You know, I tell you, Revelation, that's a tough book, but it's like, I think I know what's going on. Then Ezekiel, that's a tough book, but it's like, I'm pretty sure we can kind of figure it out. There's some scholars, they've done their work. Okay. And then Zechariah, and you go to the scholars and they're like, we don't know. We don't know. We're not sure. You know, and then you got this debate between what we might call liberal scholars and conservative scholars. By that, I mean not Democrat, Republican. I mean liberal as in the Bible isn't really entirely true. It's got mistakes and errors. Like it says it's from this time, but it's not. It was written much later or stuff like that. And then the conservatives say, no, we're going to trust. This is from who it says it's from. We're going to trust that it's God's word, right? A debate between them about when this book falls and all that. But at the end of the day, no one really knows where Zechariah came from. But the best guess, as I said a couple days ago, is this is out of the exile. This is out of the time after the fall of Israel. David's kingdom is great. God's promises are all being fulfilled. Solomon brings it to bear as the sun comes down, right? And wisdom is incarnate in a man. And then he, as much as he does that, he kind of blows it because he's not Jesus. And then his sons really blow it and they rip the kingdom in half. Israel becomes the nation in the north, Judah, the nation in the south, and they're at odds. Israel is just about pagan the entire time. They make new golden calves, right? They're doing all sorts of chaos, and eventually God just wipes them out. Assyria comes down, sends them away. The lost tribes of Israel take place, right? 10 tribes gone. Boom. Where'd they go? Nobody knows. They're not coming back because that's how the Assyrians were. They were brutal. And then you have Judah last a little while longer, but they still keep turning their eyes to the false gods, to the pagan worship around them, the high places, the Asherah poles, all this stuff. And so eventually God just says, look, this old covenant thing, it's just a shadow anyway. So I'm going to show you that judgment has to happen and take you away. But my promises are still going to be good. I'm still going to hold them. And so I will come bring you back. And all these promises are still going to be fulfilled in this land, but I kind of reboot here a little bit. And so Babylon comes, takes them away. They go up, they live as exiles in the diaspora, the dispersion, foreigners in that strange land. How can we sing a song of Zion up here in this foreign land, they say in the Psalms? And during that time, you have a number of prophets that arise, Ezekiel, Daniel, and probably Zechariah, all dealing with the fact that the temple is gone. The Ark of the Covenant is gone. The worship and the sacrifices is gone. How can you be a Hebrew without the temple and without the Ark? Well, they have to start clinging to those promises of the return to Jerusalem. And it's pretty clear that that's what Zechariah is about. And then they do get sent back. Cyrus, king of Persia, arises, and he is God's instrument, as Isaiah prophesied, and they begin trickling back in. They start working to build the wall. They start working to build the temple, Ezra, Nehemiah. That's what that's all about. All sorts of new catastrophes taking place. You got people who don't believe God's going to protect them. That sounds familiar, yeah? And fightings and whatnot. And in the midst of this, it's like, well, how do we pinpoint where Zechariah is? And it's really tough. He doesn't give a lot of markers the way that other prophets do. He doesn't tell you in this year or in that year. He doesn't tell you with this name or with that name. So you just kind of got to guess. And then again, today's text is like, it's a beast. It's huge. What is he talking about? Where is he talking about? And I'll try to give you my guess on it, right, as we go. But the good news is that in the middle of all of it, when you're not really sure exactly when he's talking about in terms of, Judah becoming a burning pot, there's this great language about all people looking upon the one we have pierced. Ooh, that should ring a bell, doesn't it? And we don't want to miss that. We want to catch that. All right, here we go. Let's see if we can get through this in about 10 minutes here. The burden of the word of the Lord concerning Israel. Thus declares the Lord, who stretched out the heavens and founded the earth and formed the spirit of man within him. All right, so God who made everything says this. Behold, I am about to make Jerusalem a cup of staggering to all the surrounding peoples. The siege of Jerusalem will also be against Judah. On that day, I will make Jerusalem a heavy stone for all peoples. All who lift it will surely hurt themselves, and all the nations of the earth will gather against it. So is that talking about the destruction of Jerusalem that had just happened? That's what some scholars think. Is that talking about when they're rebuilding the wall and how difficult things get there and there's all the Maccabean revolts and all that stuff going on? Is it talking about the destruction of Jerusalem in 70 AD and the fulfillment of Jesus' own words about that temple being torn down? That's actually where I lean with this. That after the covenant is fulfilled by Christ, after he does not abolish the law but fulfills it, now that land is no longer holy, not in the way it was going to be, not as a place of prophecy being fulfilled. It's where it happened, right? It's where Jesus walked. You can go visit. That's great. You know, check out the spots. But it no longer is needed for that purpose. And so as various religions throughout the world try to retain control of it, it becomes a cup of staggering to all who would seek it. I mean, is not that space to this day one of the most conflicted areas in the world? On that day, declares the Lord, I will strike every horse with panic and its rider with madness. But for the sake of the house of Judah, I will keep my eyes open when I strike every horse of the peoples with blindness. Then the clans of Judah shall say to themselves, the inhabitants of Jerusalem have strength through the Lord of hosts, their God. Right. So as all the nations try to hold on to that little strip of land there in the Middle East, the faithful, the Christian, has God instead. Has the name of God. It doesn't matter where the land is. We have the Christ who has ascended. Verse 6, on that day I will make the clans of Judah like a blazing pot in the midst of wood, like a flaming torch among sheaves, and they shall devour to the right and the left all the surrounding peoples, whilst Jerusalem shall again be inhabited in its place in Jerusalem. Now, is that talking about us, Christians, and how where we go, no one can stop us, even though they try? Like those two witnesses in Revelation who are struck down dead but then live again, right? The church everlasting? Or is it talking about the Hebrew peoples who are constantly sojourning? I'm going to lean toward that first one, although I could see how someone could go the other way. That the church is a stumbling block in the same way that Christ himself is a stumbling block. We're a burning pot wherever we go. And the Lord will give salvation to the tents of Judah first. That is what happened with the Jews being the first believers. That the glory of the house of David and the glory of the inhabitants of Jerusalem may not surpass that of Judah. On that day, the Lord will protect the inhabitants of Jerusalem so that the feeblest among them on that day shall be like David. And the house of David shall be like God, like the angel of the Lord going before them. And on that day, I will seek to destroy all the nations that come against Jerusalem. Just mentioned baptism in the previous segment, that even an infant baptized into Christ is as strong as David, has the angel of the Lord guarding him, has Jesus himself united with him. No one can rise up against you, Christian, because you are guarded by God. And I will pour out on the house of David and the inhabitants of Jerusalem a spirit of grace. Hey, yeah, sounds like the church to me. And pleas for mercy. Isn't that what we do? Lord, have mercy. Christ, have mercy. So that when they look on me, on him whom they have pierced, oh, the cross, they shall mourn for him as one mourns for an only child and weep bitterly over him as one weeps over a firstborn. That is, as we look on the Christ, our sin is brought before our eyes and there is this bittersweet, I mean, you've been to Good Friday service, bittersweet, joyful mourning of what we deserve and how Christ has taken it for us. Verse 11, on that day, the mourning in Jerusalem will be as great as the mourning for Hadad Rimmon in the plain of Megiddo. The land shall mourn each family by itself, the family of the house of David by itself and their wives by themselves, the family of the house of Nathan by itself and their wives by themselves, the family of the house of Levi by itself and their wives by themselves, the family of the Shemites by itself and their wives by themselves, and all the families that are left, each by itself and their wives by themselves. That's talking about the day of the cross, the darkness covering the land and people walking by wagging their heads, right? Everybody mourned. They didn't even know what was going on. But on that day, verse 13, verse 1, there shall be a fountain opened for the house of David and the inhabitants of Jerusalem to cleanse them from sin and uncleanness, right? As we pierce him, wagging our heads, not believing who he is and striking him with a spear, what flows out? Water and blood. The fountain of life, the tree of forgiveness. Oh, what a prophecy. And on that day, declares the Lord of hosts, I will cut off the names of the idols from the land so that they shall be remembered no more. That is, your sin's gone. And I will remove from the land the prophets and the spirit of uncleanness. That is, all false teaching's gone now in Jesus. It's gone. He's taken it. He's given truth in its place. And if anyone again prophesies, his father and mother who bore him will say to him, you shall not live, for you speak lies in the name of the Lord. Hey, interesting little bit here, right? About the end of prophecy. not time to go into it right now, but we do live in an age when prophecy has stopped. It's prophesied that it will stop right here, right? And if you do, if you think you're having dreams that are telling the future, I'm supposed to say to you, you shall not live, for you speak lies in the name of the Lord. Well, we're not actually supposed to kill each other, but be quiet. Stop it, right? Stop the prophecies that are no longer needed. Christ has fulfilled them all. And his father and mother who bore him shall pierce him through when he prophesies. That's Old Testament way of dealing with it. We don't do that now. We just stay, again, stop it. Your lies are piercing us. On that day, every prophet will be ashamed of his vision when he prophesies. He will not put on a hairy cloak in order to deceive, but he will say, I am no prophet. I am a worker of the soil, for a man sold me in my youth. And if one asks him, what are these wounds on your back? He will say, the wounds I received in the house of my friends. Awake, O sword, against my shepherd. Here it is. Oh, man, so good. Striking down Jesus. Against the man who stands next to me, declares the Lord of hosts, strike the shepherd, and the sheep will be scattered. Right? Christ says himself, this applies to him. And I will turn my hand against the little ones, and the whole land, declares the Lord, two-thirds shall be cut off and perished, and one-third shall be kept alive. And I will put this third into the fire and refine them as one refines silver and test them as gold is tested. They will call upon my name, and I will answer them. I will say, they are my people. And they will say, the Lord is my God. That is what Jesus has achieved for you. How good it is. How beautiful a text. I wish we had more time to go into it, but I hope I began to open it up for you today. In order to make sure we get our New Testament reading, we're going to go straight to a couple of announcements here, and we'll be right back in just a moment.